You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal, but everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back. Happy Monday, everybody. I hope your week is starting out strong. As ever and always, the news coming at a fast and furious clip to start our weeks off. And we have just the right guest here on the Maggie Dawn Show to help you make sense of it all. I'm joined this afternoon by my colleague in broadcasting, Matt Rothschild, host of Wisconsin Forward, a podcast you can find at civicmedia.us and anywhere that you like to find your favorite podcasts. I know I am a listener and sometimes privileged enough to be a guest with Matt. Matt and I are happy to bring on Executive Director of the ACLU Wisconsin, Dr. Melinda Brennan. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Dr. Brennan.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's just hit it full on. The big news coming out of the weekend was Donald Trump's apparent unfamiliarity with his oath of office and his fundamental promise to America to uphold and serve the Constitution of the United States. He did an interview with Meet the Press with Kristen Welker. Let's take a listen. This is Cut 8.
Your Secretary of State says everyone who's here, citizens and non-citizens, deserve due process. Do you agree? Mr. President?
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know.
Don't you need to uphold the Constitution of the United States as president?
I don't know. I have to respond by saying again, I have brilliant lawyers that work for me, and they are going to obviously follow what the Supreme Court said.
I don't know if I have to follow the Constitution. Dr. Brennan, how... I don't want to swear on the air. How bat guano crazy is that statement from a now two-time president of the United States?
I think the correct percentage is 100%. I'm not sure that you can uphold your promise to the American people if you don't understand something as fundamental as due process. I don't think that you understand, for example, how disruptive it is to communities or to the judiciary, your actions, if you don't understand due process. I don't think that you're making policy decisions and or funding decisions and or any of the decisions that are coming down from this particular administration that impact every citizen and everyone who's living in the United States, if you don't understand something as fundamental as due process. I just don't think that you're competent if you don't understand due process, and you do not need to be an attorney to understand that. And I would hope that someone who had taken an oath as important as that would understand something as simple and as profound in everyday life as due process.
And of course, due process is guaranteed not just to U.S. citizens, but to all persons under the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. But what I gathered from that, other than his appalling disdain or disregard for the Constitution or ignorance of the Constitution, was his signaling to the U.S. Supreme Court that maybe they'll get him out of this ultimately. Did you hear that in his answer as well?
I continue to have concern, yes, for what his relationship to the Supreme Court is going to be. When rulings come down, whether they're at the federal level, as we've seen before, or at the Supreme Court, will he be following those rulings? Will he be further setting up a constitutional crisis? And an awful lot of colleagues, whether they're at ACLU National or in the legal field, are asking questions about what's the level of constitutional crisis that we already have. And so that's the state of affairs. The question is, how much more complicated or difficult is it going to be? How much more multifaceted is it going to be? How many more rulings is he going to be ignorant of, or how many traffic jams of who is in charge and what does the law mean? And those that are charged with being fair and upholding that law, whether that is judges or elected officials, are they going to be treated as traitors to the state for doing their jobs? And so when I say multifaceted, it isn't merely, and as important as the judiciary is, it isn't merely the judiciary. Are people who are holding our government together going to be allowed to do their jobs? Or are they going to be harassed and threatened at every turn and their jobs made so much more difficult? And are people going to be able to avail themselves of justice? Or are they going to be wondering constantly if the government that they depend on a daily basis falls apart?
And how deeply do you think we are down the hill into a constitutional crisis yourself?
I think we are already there. I mean, there are too many brilliant minds that are saying the same thing from very different ideological standpoints. And I think if there's something that's truly compelling for me, the ACLU is a nonpartisan organization. It's incredibly important that we hold people accountable across the political spectrum, right? And that we have to ask ourselves what's right for all of us. And an example of that is this lack of understanding or refusal to understand what due process is. If you're in trouble, don't you want to have your day in court? If you're accused of something, whether or not that's accurate, don't you want your day in court? And that should be something that we can all count on, whether we're citizens or not, across all kinds of statuses. You should be able to avail yourself of those rights and to not understand them or to push them aside. I think that is to the kernel of your question. If you can't understand it, something as simple as that impacts us all, I think that the crisis can't be underestimated right now.
So this is what Trump was saying at Meet the Press. You know, we can't have a million court cases. We can't have these dangerous people have, you know, a million of them, 2 million of them, 3 million have court cases. It'll just clog the system and go on for hundreds of years. What's your answer to that?
Perhaps you shouldn't be putting the system in that position. Perhaps you shouldn't be changing policy so radically that that is the situation that we're in. And to imagine that these mere accusations of criminal activity that are often not backed up with some very obvious cases that I think we're all familiar with at this point of folks that have been removed from the United States, but there is no evidence to back up why they would have been removed or folks being harassed or separated from their families. This is not based on pending cases. This is not, these are just, quite frankly, brown folks that you can accuse of not being from here. It is racist and it's xenophobic. It's also classist. And I don't think we, I think we don't do ourselves any favors if we're not talking about these things as intersecting. These are folks that don't have enough privilege to be able to protect themselves. Do you have friends in high places that you can just call for some legal advice? If you don't, then you are subject to a different set of the law acting on you than other people. And that is just unacceptable because the vast majority of us don't have those resources. And so why should justice be so far away for them?
And justice is miles away. Even the most basic habeas corpus right of just going, not having a trial, just going to see a judge to see whether they can throw you out of the country or not. Even that is not afforded under Trump. I'm sorry, Maggie.
No, not at all. Folks, we got Matt Rothschild, my guest co-host, as a guest right now, Dr. Melinda Brennan, executive director of ACLU Wisconsin, discussing Donald Trump's eyebrow raising, to put it very mildly, interview and responses to easy, no-brainer questions from Kristen Welker yesterday on Meet the Press. I find all of this incredible. There was a whole bunch of what you guys were talking about that I wanted to lift up or take a different angle on. The first being Donald Trump as a criminal defendant received the most, like the biggest, the most amazing due process of any criminal defendant anywhere. The courts bent over backwards to afford him every opportunity to defend himself. The DOJ negotiated with Trump's lawyers about the stolen super secret spy documents that put our country at risk because he just threw them into a ballroom and a gilded golden bathroom. So for that guy who got every benefit that our system provides, it is illustrative, Dr. Brennan, of precisely what you are saying. And that is, yeah, you bet your butt we've had a two-tiered system of justice in this country. And it's never been about Republicans and Democrats. It's been about haves and have access and have-nots, especially the have-nots that are black and brown folks who may speak with an accent. That's the two-tier system of justice. It's been this way forever. Donald Trump's making that inequity worse. contrary to his most fundamental oath that he owes all of us as citizens. The system overload argument I find to be offensive at every point. We cannot say, as a nation that is supposedly a nation of laws, that we will set aside the laws when it's because it's hard. Oh, this is hard, so we'll just forget the laws. That's not how it works. And by the way, the bill that had been negotiated in the Senate prior to Donald Trump's reelection in November, that was a bipartisan border bill, provided the very resources to expand system capacity to avoid the problem that he's now saying alleviates him of the obligation to follow the Constitution and due process. Dr. Brennan, am I missing something here, or is that what we got going on?
You sure aren't. No, Maggie. No, Maggie, you're not missing a thing at all. Here's an example of policy having immediate real-world impacts that change the quality of life for everyday folks that live in the United States, as well as this that holds or undergirds the situation that we're in now. The sensitive locations policy, this idea that you're not supposed to have ICE agents in houses of worship. In courtrooms,
schools, yeah.
In schools, where medical professionals are. Why? Because it's a basic quality of life thing. Should you be able to take your kids to school? Yeah, I think so. Should you be able to get medical care? Yeah, I think so. But the undoing of that internal policy was not codified in law. That is some of the ground that you have to build before you get to this place of saying 2-3 million. Well, if you had just left that policy in place, would we be talking about judges and whether or not they have control in their courtrooms? Would we? Would we be having a debate about a governor who says, I want my employees, my state employees, who are doing their jobs, who are executing their duties to make sure that we have a functioning state of Wisconsin. I just want them to be able to have an attorney present so that they can follow the law. So the accusations that are coming now and the attacks, the repeated attacks that we're seeing against the judiciary and other elected officials, all of that depends on what? Going all the way back to a policy that was internal, that did not have to be upended, where there were protected spaces for folks, where they could just get their basic needs met. And that includes, and I just want to highlight this, and Maggie, you've been bringing us back to this as part of the conversation over the last weeks. How can you seek justice if there are going to be folks of different citizenship statuses? How can you seek justice if you are a witness and doing your duty to the place that you live and showing up to testify, if you are a victim and you're looking for justice, right? And also, all of us need to be able to access that due process. But you change that one policy, and then all of a sudden, courtrooms are thrown into the mix as a lightning rod, and any kind of attempt to uphold the law and to have employees of the government do their jobs well, all of a sudden that's in peril. But why? Because you threw away a sensitive location policy that had been in place for a very long time. Well, you upend that, and then you want to not live up to the requirements of due process, to your oath of office. I think that's a manufactured situation. One that we did not have to be in just now. A question that is only being asked because of what's been put in motion.
Just like our constitutional crisis, just like our economic crisis, just like our foreign policy crisis, all of those unforced errors that have real life existential consequences for your family, for mine, and for all of our communities. We continue our discussion of the attacks on our most closely held American values and our rule of law with Dr. Melinda Brennan, Executive Director of ACLU Wisconsin, and my co-host today, Matt Rothschild. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. Hope your Monday is starting your week off well. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. On Mondays, I'm joined by a fine guest co-host. His name is Matt Rothschild. He puts out the amazing podcast, also on the Civic Media Radio Network, called Wisconsin Forward. You can check out Matt's fine podcast program on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, also on Spotify and Apple Pods or wherever you get your pods. Matt and I chatting this afternoon with Dr. Melinda Brennan, the executive director of the ACLU Wisconsin. We've been talking about Donald Trump's shocking interview with Kristen Welker. If you missed it because you're not attached to your television set all Sunday long and sucking up news like a Hoover vacuum like I am, let's take a level set. Let's listen again to Donald Trump saying he doesn't understand due process or his oath to uphold the Constitution.
Your Secretary of State says everyone who's here, citizens and non-citizens, deserve due process. Do you agree, Mr. President?
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know.
Don't you need to uphold the Constitution of the United States as president?
I don't know. I have to respond by saying again, I have brilliant lawyers that work for me, and they are going to obviously follow what the Supreme Court said.
You don't need brilliant lawyers to be able to read the language of the Fifth Amendment that says all persons shall be entitled to due process here in the United States. And then, of course, despite his seeming complete and total utter baffling ignorance of the most fundamental principle that is due process, the most fundamental principle in every democracy, his border czar seems to think Donald Trump is some sort of genius. Let's take a listen.
The president says he doesn't know what his responsibilities are under Article 5 of the Constitution. Who would it be who would educate him about that? Would it be you?
I think the president is one of the, if not the most knowledgeable president that we've ever had. Look, people can beat on President Trump all you want. President Trump's a game changer. I've worked for 6 presidents, starting with Ronald Reagan. I'm a border guy. Even President Clinton and Obama took steps to secure the border because they understood you can't have national security if you don't have border security. No one did more than President Trump during his first administration. We handed the Biden administration the most secure border in my lifetime, and he purposely unsecured it. First president in the history of the nation to do that. Look at what President Trump achieved in 8 weeks. He did in 8 weeks what Joe Biden couldn't and wouldn't do in 4 years. We have the most secure border in the history of this nation right now because of President Trump. Greatest president of my lifetime.
Blah, blah, blah. Just fact-checking here. We bet Joe Biden had deported more people by this point in his presidency than Donald Trump has in his second presidency. President Obama had a very high monthly average deportation rate. So did President Biden. The issue here is system capacity. There was a bipartisan bill to actually help facilitate greater border security, with Donald Trump personally torpedoed so that he could run on the issue and have dippy-doos like Tom Homan say dippy-doo things like Tom Homan does, like this is the greatest president of my lifetime. And listen, you're not the greatest.
Not only that, in U.S. history, most knowledgeable in U.S.
history.
This guy's more knowledgeable than Thomas Jefferson, evidently.
Abraham Lincoln, yes.
Yeah, the level of butt-kissing is just astronomical in this with this group of cabinet folks.
Well, that's the job qualifier, right? Do you have A-grade butt-kissing ability? If so, then your resume will be forwarded on to the hiring manager. But Tom Homan's statements belied by the reality. You can't secure a nation if you don't understand due process, full stop. Safety without freedom in democracy is only an illusion. If you trade away your freedoms and our most basic process protections in the law, your safety is an illusion. It is a con. You are giving away the very reason we want to be safe, so that we can live as free people, self-governed under this system of laws. Melinda, I wanted to ask you, when you hear this, and we have heard from Justice Jackson on Friday, Judge Beryl Howell, that Donald Trump's actions are lawless and dangerous, what do you think is the message to get through to a Trump voter who is not a full MAGA acolyte about the importance of the moment we find ourselves in?
I think the through line is asking people what they want for themselves. If you were the one who was needed to have an attorney, if you were the one that needed your due process, would you care then? I mean, start from a place of self-interest, and that cuts across the ideological spectrum. And I've said it before on your show, and I'll say it again. I'd really, really prefer if everybody gave a damn about their neighbors. I'd really, really prefer that. Okay. I'd rather you care about if you've got kids and they're in school, I'd rather you care about their families. I'd rather you care about every single person you interact with in the public sphere, in general life, walking down the street. I would really like that. But if you can't get there, you can get to a place where you're thinking about your own rights and what you need to have in place to think that this is a valuable place to live. And due process is one of those things. And I'll tell you, in speaking about the fear or the accusation or the concerns about wait till you see what's coming, I will just say that enough of us in the state of Wisconsin were extremely concerned. And so 20 other organizations, our partner organizations, got together and said, I need you to understand how important this moment is. If you're going to threaten judges, if you're not going to listen to rulings, if you're going to put into doubt the separation of powers, if you're going to be threatening elected officials, please don't imagine that we aren't watching and that we will act.
Absolutely. And you're referring to Holman saying to our own governor here in Wisconsin, wait to see what's coming, when all the Governor Evers did was say, if ICE shows up at your state office, contact your attorneys at the attorney general office or your staff attorney as far as how to respond legally to having ICE right there. And Governor Evers spoke up bravely, calling it chilling and saying he would not back down. And I give him a lot of credit for that.
As do we.
A necessary courage in this moment from our governor. I am not afraid from Governor Tony Evers. Neither is the ACLU of Wisconsin. Go look them out, check them up, sign up, get involved. Thank you to Dr. Melinda Brennan. When we come back, we're going to talk about the other massive impact on your family's well-being, the Donald Trump tariff terror. More unforced errors to be discussed next on this, the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a fine guest co-host with me. His name is Matt Rothschild. He hosts a podcast for Civic Media called Wisconsin Forward. Yes, our state's motto. You can find Matt's fine work by going to civicmedia.us and checking it out there. You can also find his podcast on Spotify and Apple Pods. You just put a new episode out, Matt, just a few days ago. Tell us a little bit about it, because it cues up our discussion in this second half of the hour here on Trump's tariffs. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it's about campaign finance reform and what we need to do here in Wisconsin to the extent possible. Of course, there are real problems with the U.S. Supreme Court decisions that you and I talked about on the podcast, Citizens United and a whole raft of other ones that need to be overturned. But we can do something here in Wisconsin. I was actually at the Capitol one late November 2015 evening when the Republicans in the legislature totally rewrote our campaign finance laws to let the super rich and corporations have more power and more say than they've ever had before in Wisconsin, really letting the super rich spend unlimited amounts of money and just making a mockery of the idea of having limits on campaign donations and having, some limit on corruption and have some level of transparency here in Wisconsin, just out the window that evening. I also spoke with Senator Chris Larson, who was on the floor that night, who was objecting to all the changes that were being made. And he's been a leader ever since in screaming, bloody murder and saying, here's a legislative fix that we can impose here if we ever get enough good legislators who really care about our democracy at the State House.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. The reason that I hat tip towards campaign finance reform and corruption is that I think Donald Trump's fascination with tariffs and tariff policy is not coincidental, in that because both the House and Senate have refused to actually abide by and utilize their constitutional obligations and powers to actually craft tariff policy. They've effectively stepped back by saying we're not going to review the emergency declarations. What they've done is then go against the constitutional ordering of our democracy, allowing Donald Trump to, at whim, changing from day to day, decide what U.S. tariff policy is going to be. That opens up the door for all kinds of corruption, right? Because since he can do it unilaterally, those that come bearing gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh to the self-ordained king, right, who also thinks he might and should be Pope, you bring
or
the right
Bitcoin.
Right, or Bitcoin. You bring the right Bitcoin, you bring the right purchase level of his new meme coin, and yes, your business will get a tariff exemption. Well, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce went not bearing gifts, but with hat in hand on behalf of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's, by leaps and bounds, largest constituency, which is small business owners. Last week, sending a letter to Donald Trump, literally begging him in the Oval Office to consider making some exemptions for smaller businesses to his tariff policy. We are going to see thousands of small business bankruptcies, and they are only going to get worse because small businesses don't have the extra mil sitting around to put into his meme coin. They don't got the extra two and a half mil for his inaugural committee or his chosen PACs, right? They don't have the financial leverage, nor do they have the access. So just like the two-tier justice system, which functions only to help those that are wealthy and have access, Donald Trump's tariff policies are functioning now to only help the very wealthiest, the largest businesses, and those with access. It is ripe for corruption. Donald Trump, in his interview with Kristen Welker, basically saying, I'm not worried about small businesses. They'll be fine. Let's take a listen. This is cut three.
Just asking you about small businesses. Are there any discussions about giving any relief to small businesses?
They're not going to need it.
Okay.
They're going to make so much money.
Are these tariffs?
If you build your product here. Remember, there are no tariffs. If you build your product here, it's very easy. It's very simple.
The man literally and demonstrably knows nothing about tariffs or economics. You can just tell if you listen closely. I've got one
or
of
how small businesses run either.
Correct. Like they have to sometimes import things and rely on right. all sorts of supply chains that come from abroad, including a lot of small businesses relying on plastic products, et cetera, and other consumer sub products from China. Largest tariffs we've ever seen on China in modern American history. One of our favorite texters on the line, a conservative friend of the show, his name is Mark from Sussex. Mark says, Donald Trump owning the libs again. Just wait until those tariffs start working. And I asked Mark very sincerely in response, working to do what? Right? Like, even if you assume, for argument's sake, the tariffs will effectively reestablish different manufacturing in the United States. First, that process is a 3 to 7 year process at base. And second, if you do, and like Donald Trump just said, there are no tariffs then, where is the revenue coming from to continue to fund the largest tax cuts for billionaires and hundred millionaires that this country has ever seen, except for the first ones that he passed during his first administration? It just doesn't work.
And what happens in those 3 to 7 years for the companies who can't get the supplies that they need to keep their doors open? I mean, it's total chaos. And this idea, this gloating about owning the libs that people keep saying just drives me crazy.
To what end? It's sort of like, okay, fine, he's owning the libs. How's that working for the middle class? Like, is it just about the performative political aspect of saying we're winning? Is the winning the point? Because if winning is the point, it's just about your team winning. Well, yeah, then we should all take note, including every single one of Donald Trump's voters that wanted cheaper eggs, gas, and housing. We should all take note. They're not playing the game for you. They're just playing to win at any cost, including your family's economic well-being. Let's take, of course, Ron Johnson, butt kisser in chief in the Senate, came out, defended all this nonsense. Let's take a listen. This is cut four.
Well, I'm old enough to remember when Ronald Reagan took office and inflation was completely out of control. He and Paul Volcker had to take some pretty bold and swift actions to tame inflation. That included a pretty severe recession, but that's what it took. When you come into office and you are inheriting enormous messes across the spectrum, you know, an open border that presents a clear and present danger, a 40-year high inflation that has dramatically devalued the dollar, endless wars going on, it's hard to clean up those enormous messes. So I appreciate President Trump has acted boldly, swiftly, decisively to clean up some of these messes. And yeah, it's not going to be easy. And sometimes the results are going to have to be reevaluated and relooked at, some actions reversed. But you have to act boldly when you have that responsibility.
So to summarize here, first of all, when Reagan took over, the inflation problem was caused because of the oil crisis and all sorts of not self-created economic pressures, okay? All of the economic hardships right now were created after January 20th. Let's be clear. Not all, but the acute swings that we're seeing, the S&P being down 6.6%, that's after January 20th, right? McDonald's seeing its largest decline since the pandemic. That's not Joe Biden. That's Donald Trump. Housing start prices are up wildly. It's going to be harder for people. That's not Joe Biden. That's Donald Trump. And let's remember, first of all, always rich to hear Rojo taking up and invoking Reagan. Reagan would do a spit take if he heard someone invoking his name to defend tariffs. Let's listen to what Ronald Reagan actually said about tariffs. Cut five.
Now, imposing such tariffs or trade barriers and restrictions of any kind are steps that I am loath to take. And in a moment, I'll mention the sound economic reasons for this, that over the long run, such trade barriers hurt every American worker and consumer.
And cut six. Yeah, let's just take this. This is a little bit more Reagan sound. Cut six.
Indeed, throughout the world, there's a growing realization that the way to prosperity for all nations is rejecting protectionist legislation and promoting fair and free competition. Now, there are sound historical reasons for this. For those of us who lived through the Great Depression, the memory of the suffering it caused is deep and searing. And today, many economic analysts and historians argue that high tariff legislation passed back in that period, called the Smoot-Hawley tariff, greatly deepened the depression and prevented economic recovery. You see, at first, when someone says, let's impose tariffs on foreign imports, it looks like they're doing the patriotic thing by protecting American products and jobs. And sometimes for a short while it works, but only for a short time. What eventually occurs is, first, homegrown industries start relying on government protection in the form of high tariffs. They stop competing and stop making the innovative management and technological changes they need to succeed in world markets. And then, while all this is going on, something even worse occurs. High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars. The result is more and more tariffs, higher and higher trade barriers, and less competition. So soon, because of the prices made artificially high by tariffs that subsidize inefficiency and poor management, people stop buying. Then the worst happens. Markets shrink and collapse, businesses and industries shut down, and millions of people lose their jobs.
Thank you. Ronald Reagan actually showing some accurate understanding of how mass tariffs operate. And let's remember, everybody, first things first, Donald Trump raised taxes three times to undo the effects of a tax cut that nearly tanked the U.S. economy coming in. So I don't know what the hell Ron Johnson's talking about. I don't know what Donald Trump's talking about. What do you make of all this mess, Matt?
Well, and Ron Johnson saying it's not going to be easy is a little bit arrogant, because, you know, he's not going to suffer. Trump's not going to suffer. It's poor and middle class folks who are going to suffer in this recession that's coming. It's a recession that's solely auto made by Trump himself. And, you know, Ron Johnson had nothing, no answer really about tariffs, because he's, I mean, if you took him aside, he would say, I don't like tariffs. But of course, he couldn't say that out loud, because he had to appreciate, you know, the great leader and how bold the great leader was. I mean, it was embarrassing.
Also worthy of note is Ronald Reagan talking about tariff legislation. Of course, because our Constitution assigns the power to lay and collect taxes and duties to regulate commerce with foreign nations to the Congress, which under Dear Leader, House Republicans and Senate Republicans won't lift a finger. Remember this. House Republicans in the continuing resolution to avoid a government shutdown snuck in a provision that said a day is not a day so that they would not have to take up and vote on Donald Trump's declaration of an emergency for the rest of this House term. A day is not a day. 24 hours ain't 24 hours to House Republicans, and they'll claim it so as long as it means they don't have to ever go against Dear Leader. Listen, the MAGA caucus in the House, the sun no longer rises in the east and sets in the west. Days aren't days. Up is down, left is right. Just as long as Dear Leader's happy. We've got some thoughts on Cinco de Mayo from Matt and I when we return here on the Civic Media Radio Network on this Monday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
The time is flying by when we're amongst friends. I got a great friend with me this afternoon. His name's Matt Rothschild, host of Wisconsin Forward, a podcast you can find at civicmedia.us, on Spotify and Apple Pods, or wherever you get your podcasts from. He is my new guest co-host on Mondays. Very happy to have him. We spent a little time this last segment talking about tariffs, because very recently, we're all aware of the fact that we've got 145% tariffs on goods imported from China. We got massive new tariffs on products being imported from Canada and Mexico. Those impacts are still rolling in. We're going to look for pain points by the end of May, maybe some shortages. Listen, when we get and start looking at back to school time, the holiday time, it's going to be even worse. Even if you reversed everything today, we would still run into supply problems because that's how supply chains work. You got to be months and months ahead. Most notably, as of late, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce basically begged the Trump administration to create processes by which or blanket exemptions to the tariff policy for small businesses that are must basically import certain subcomponents of what they sell because those things cannot be manufactured in the United States. The Trump administration basically said no dice. Also, over the weekend, Donald Trump making statements indicating that the China tariffs are, quote, permanent. Gosh knows how that's going to play out. Nice negotiating stance to say, oh, we'll negotiate, but our tariffs are permanent. Just get rid of yours. Not really how international trade works. All of this brings us full circle to the role that immigrants play in our economy. Absolutely essential labor source. Just ask any Wisconsin farmer. So what happens as millions and millions more folks are deported by Donald Trump, perhaps unconstitutionally, without their due process rights? Less labor means it's more expensive to manufacture things if you can manufacture or farm them at all. Less labor ultimately leading to higher prices, exacerbating the tariff problem, and on we go. Which brings us even fuller circle to today, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, a holiday that many in our communities celebrate. Matt, tell us more about Cinco de Mayo. You had some thoughts that you wanted to share.
Yeah, I wanted to read a poem by Luis Rodriguez, who's the author of a great memoir called Always Running. But this is a poem entitled Cinco de Mayo, and it's just about 2 minutes. I'll read it if you don't mind.
Please.
Cinco de Mayo celebrates a burning people, those whose land is starved of blood, civilizations which are no longer holders of the night. We reconquer with our feet, with our tongues, that dangerous language, saying more of this world than the volumes of textured and controlled words on a page. We are the gentle rage. Our hands hold the stream of the earth, the flowers of dead cities, the green of butterfly wings. Cinco de Mayo is about the barefoot, the untooled, the warriors of want who took on the greatest army Europe ever mustered and won. Now he switches gears. I once saw a Mexican man stretched across an upturned sidewalk near Chicago's 18th and Bishop one 5th of May. He brought up a near empty bottle to the withering sky and yelled out a grito with the words, "Que viva Cinco de Mayo." And I knew then what it meant for barefoot Zapoteca indígenas in the Battle of Pueblo and what it meant for me there on 18th Street among Los Ancianos, the moon-faced children and the futureless youth dodging the gunfire and careening battered cars. And it brought me to that war that never ends, the war Cinco de Mayo was a battle of, that I keep fighting, that we keep bleeding for, that war against servitude that a compa on 18th Street knew all about as he crawled inside a bottle of the meanest Mexican spirits. That's Luis Rodriguez, Cinco de Mayo.
How beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. The lens that I want us all to remember as perhaps you celebrate with friends and family in your community Cinco de Mayo is that Cinco de Mayo is celebrated in honor of Mexico throwing off French imperialistic control. It's about self-determination. It's about consent of the governed. It's about representative government. It is our Mexican brethren's analogy to very basic American values. We are in a moment in our country where our right to self-represent, our right to not have billionaire unelected overlords, our right to declare that money isn't speech and corporations are not people and that government corruption at a scale never seen before in American history is not the way that we wish to be governed. I would also respectfully offer to each and every one of you that Cinco de Mayo is a reminder that in the project of human dignity, self-governance and due process are critical. These are shared human values expressed throughout history. And my last little bit of a history lesson for everybody about Cinco de Mayo is this, that at the opening of the French chambers, meaning the governance meetings in 1866, Napoleon III announced in response in part to Cinco de Mayo, Mexico's victory over the Second French Empire, he announced that he would withdraw French troops from Mexico. In reply to a French governmental request for American neutrality that accompanied that withdrawal, the American Secretary of State at the time, William H. Seward, replied that French withdrawal from Mexico must be immediate and unconditional, affirming that very American value of self-determination, consent of the governed, and representative democracy. We have more in common than ever divides us. Remember that, my friends. Big thank you to Matt Rothschild, my friend, and each and every one of yours. That's going to do it for us. I'll be back tomorrow. We got State Slate with Dan Schaefer and a bunch of great guests lined up for you. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.